Good morning and welcome to Local Matters here on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Michael Detweiler, and today I have Dr. Tony Hudson as my guest. And in full disclosure here, Dr. Hudson is my father-in-law. I was blessed to have married his daughter more than 16 years ago. And so he and I have known each other for several years, many years, I should say. So welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Michael.
Well, thank you. So tell us about Dr. Tony Hudson, a physician here in Cookeville for, hard to believe, 45 years. Where did you grow up? Where's home? Where? Tell us the story.
Well, that's a long story, but I'll make it quick.
Okay.
Grew up in Macon County, actually in Lafayette, so close by, so I knew the region.
Sure.
All my life, actually. Went to school, graduated from high school in Lafayette, 1965. Went to Middle Tennessee State, actually, for my undergraduate degree. The first time I ever set foot on the campus was when I went over to register.
Wow.
So the options were limited in those days. So there weren't many people that went to college. So myself and three or four of my buddies decided that we'd like to go to college. So we ended up going to Middle Tennessee because it was close.
Yes, close. So did you play any sports in high school?
I played every sport that we had in high school.
I love it.
And those days there were only three, baseball, football, and basketball.
So. Okay. So no soccer, lacrosse,
no
golf,
soccer, lacrosse.
None of that.
I'm still learning those games.
It's interesting. When I went to high school here, Lafayette was well known for its golf team. And even though we were a much larger school and you would think would have more of a pool of talent to choose from, Macon County was one of the schools we absolutely struggled against.
Sure.
They were just really good. So you played every sport and enjoyed baseball, football, and basketball.
Thoroughly, very much so.
So you go to MTSU, I guess, to use a word that's overused, a little culture shock from going from Macon County to Rutherford County and college campus?
Not greatly. In those days, Middle Tennessee was a small campus.
Sure.
So less than 5,000 students.
Yes.
Very inexpensive.
Yes.
I think I paid $100 for my first semester's tuition.
Wow.
$75 for a place to live. So.
Wow. Times have changed.
Times have changed.
Wow. So you go to MTSU and you were you looking at medicine at that point? Was that a decision that you had already made out of high school?
Not really. I actually went to Middle Tennessee with a goal of going to pharmacy school.
Okay.
But started working at a local hospital in Lafayette between my freshman and sophomore years. And during that period of time, was encouraged by some of the local primary care physicians that I ought to pursue medicine. So that changed my mind.
Sure.
Kept working at the hospital on my, summers off.
Okay.
And finished my undergraduate degree in 1965 and 69, I'm sorry.
Sure.
And then in September of 1969, entered medical school at the UT Center for Health Sciences in Memphis.
Okay. So would have, had you pursued pharmacy school, that was over there as well, wasn't it?
That's true.
Okay.
But in those days, you only had to go to undergraduate school for 2 years before you went to pharmacy school.
So
I went ahead and finished my degree.
At Middle Tennessee and then enrolled in Memphis.
Correct.
Medical school. So moving from Murfreesboro to Memphis, was there a great difference? I mean, because you said that Lafayette to Murfreesboro wasn't that big of a deal. Was it a bigger deal going from Murfreesboro to Memphis?
Yeah, it was considerably a bigger deal. But in medical school, you really didn't have a lot of time to seek other activities. So Most of what I did was confined to the medical school, hospitals,
sure,
my training.
Sure, because it's a big lift, going to medical school in terms of your time, managing your time with classes and managing your time with studies and then, you know, having to do the practical work involved.
Exactly.
In medicine. I've got, obviously, knowing you all these years, there's so many stories it would take hours to, you know, talk about on the radio, but you go to medical school, you're serving, doing work in hospitals there in Memphis. Tell us about meeting the lady who would eventually become your wife.
Sure. Well, most of you know, my wife of almost 50 years died suddenly in December.
Yes.
And so it's been a difficult, challenging time the last several weeks.
Yes,
but we've
has.
Had a lot of support from friends and family. And Haven and I met September of 1969.
Yes.
Actually, the first month I started in medical school. She was in nursing school. And that's a long story, but... We had about a year and a half. We dated very infrequently, just because we were both stressed for time.
Yes,
and so we were married in May of 1971.
Wow!
And she was finishing nursing school, and I was midway through medical school.
Medical school. So got married while you all were both in school. And of course, back then it wasn't like you were staying in communication, texting, or anything else. Maybe you had a chance to go out once a week.
We would talk by phone.
Yes.
On a Friday night, go out on Saturday night. Yeah. But we would study together.
Sure. Okay. And so you get married while still in medical school. That was 1971. Heath comes along sometime in 72?
He came along in August of 1972.
Yes. And so now you're in medical school and married and have a son.
Correct.
I'm sure that challenged your number of hours in a day.
It did, but we were probably, at that age, we didn't realize the challenges.
Sure, of course not.
We just got up and did what we had to do to make things happen.
That's right. And another story you talked about, which I liked, was that sometimes you and Haven would work similar shifts at hospital so you could see each other to kind of add to the time that you got to spend together.
We did. she had, of course, a busy schedule as a mother and a wife, and also she was still practicing and started practicing her nursing, using her nursing degree. She was a coronary care unit nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So I did extra work at nights, and she would go with me, and we'd work emergency rooms together in some of the outlying communities.
Okay. That's interesting. Emergency room work, so you kind of never knew what was coming in the door.
Well, most of those emergency rooms, I was the only doctor and she was the only nurse.
So wow.
It was
just a whole host of things. It makes you very well-rounded in terms of practicing medicine, working in emergency rooms, I'm sure.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
Learned a lot.
So you finally graduate medical school, do your residency, all those things, and then it's time, I guess Sean had come along, my wife at that time. That would have been around, 1974, August.
Sean was born, Heath was born in 72.
Right.
Sean was born in 74, correct.
And so you all were still in Memphis at that point.
That's right.
Okay.
And then in 1976, when we finished our residency programs, one of my good friends, Dr. Jeff Crozier, and his wife Becky were good friends, and we had always thought that we'd like to practice internal medicine together, so we started looking for opportunities, and that's a long story as well, but a colleague of mine, Dr. Roy Anderson, was already in Cookeville, and he convinced us that this was a place we needed to come. So we looked at Cookeville. It was in the region. We knew we wanted to come back to this area. Roy offered us to come up here, place to practice, and our deal was we just split over it.
There you go.
So we did, and the rest of it's history.
Yes, I was just going to say that, and as they say, the rest is history. So you had looked at other places, and I recall maybe you telling me that you also looked at like Crossville possibly going there at one point.
We did. There were good people we were looking at in Crossville, but we were the first internal medicine practice in Cookeville, and we really wanted to join up with Roy. We had a good relationship. Roy and I had driven back and forth to work together when we were in Memphis, so we knew Roy. We knew we could practice the art and science of what we had been taught to do in an internal medicine practice that was pure internal medicine,
sure,
and not a mixed type specialty group.
Sure. Interesting. We've got about 1 minute left in our first segment here, so we'll set the table for when we come back. We're going to talk about practicing here in Cookeville in the middle 1970s and how things have changed over the last 45 years. I can imagine, practicing medicine has changed quite a bit in 45 years.
Been tremendous changes, obviously. Yes. The technology has changed, and I think that's been good. A lot of things have changed, which probably have not been quite as good in terms of the interpersonal relationships between people in the healthcare field and actually the individual seeking care.
Yes, I can imagine. You're listening to Local Matters here on News Talk 94.1.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back to Local Matters here on News Talk 94.1. My guest today is my father-in-law, Dr. Tony Hudson. He is a local physician here in town. Many of you know Dr. Hudson. And as we went to the break, we were discussing his joining Internal Medicine Associates here in Cookeville in 1976 with Dr. Jeff Crozier, Dr. Roy Anderson, and others. And so tell me about moving here at that time in the medicine landscape. Obviously, there weren't as many physicians in Cookeville. So Macon County to Memphis, or Macon County to Murfreesboro to Memphis to Cookeville. Did you have any existing patients, or did you have to build that from scratch?
No, we built our practice from scratch. Dr. Phil Bertram had been in the practice with Roy.
Okay.
And he went back to Memphis and finished a gastroenterology fellowship.
Okay.
And then came back and joined us a year later. Dr. Fred Vossel joined us a couple of years after we arrived. And then later, Dr. Don Grisham, and later, Dr. Jim Talmadge.
Okay.
So we had a great group of people, really good people to work with.
Yes.
And I might add, Michael, you made a comment about being my son-in-law that, we've been really proud to have you as part of our family.
And thank you.
Proud of my children. They've all made an impact in the region that's Mm-hmm. Been something I've always encouraged them to do. I'm very fortunate. My children, Heath, Sean, and Seth, and their spouses, Michael, Jennifer, and Joelle, all still live here in Cookeville, 10 grandchildren. 9 of them are in town. We've got a great grandson now that he is. My granddaughter Kelsey and her husband Drew live over in Jackson.
Yeah.
So we've been very, very blessed.
We sure have. We're a little partial to that Judah.
Right.
I'll tell you what.
So the hospital was very small at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, there was a lot of out-migration of people who were seeking, especially specialty care that would go to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But we were sort of the nidus of a tremendous influx of what I consider to be extremely competent, very well-trained physicians, you know,
yes,
during the 70s and 80s,
yes,
and brought a lot of multi-specialty, subspecialty care to Cookeville. And I could name a lot of names people would be familiar with.
Sure.
But, it was an extremely good growth period.
Yes, it was.
I think the quality of medicine in the area excelled. The hospital grew. And so it was an exciting time to be here.
Yeah. It's neat to drive by, you know, where Internal Medicine Associates was and kind of see, mm-hmm, you know, just in that footprint of all the different, you know, not only the growth in the practices, but all the different specialties,
sure,
we have now here. It, you know, I can remember, you know, because our family came here approximately at the same month and year that you all moved to Cookeville. And any kind of heart, lung, cancer, you know, all those were being shipped out to Nashville.
Correct.
Baptist, St. Thomas, on and on, Vanderbilt. And it's really neat that, you know, here we sit in 2021, and you think about all the different specialties that never have to leave Putnam County.
Right.
And that our area is recruiting physicians to come into this area. And so I agree with you that we are certainly blessed. What do you see, and this will open up a subject that will take us through the rest of the show, what are the challenges going forward for the medical industry in terms of physicians and practicing? What do you see the challenges? Obviously, the huge thing is the pandemic going on. But outside of that, what do you see the challenges? You know, we talked briefly about the face-to-face interaction kind of going down in terms of how can I say this nicely, that sometimes when you go see a physician, they're working on, and I have a laptop in front of me, and they're punching your information in rather than looking at you eye to eye. Obviously, you don't practice like that.
Correct.
You look at them eye to eye. Somebody else is entering that information in.
Right. Well, technology has given us a lot of opportunities to practice the science of medicine much more efficiently. But in doing so, in my opinion, we're losing some of the art of medicine.
Mm.
And I really don't like to see that happening. Maybe I'm too much old school. We have to reach a balance where people in my field learn how to more efficiently deliver good health care at the same time communicate with people, and the population also needs to understand better how to efficiently get into the system,
yes,
and receive that care.
Yes.
And that takes a lot of communication. Unfortunately, in my opinion, technology has not helped us be better communicators.
Right.
And so that's just where I see us going. There's still a lot of problems, even locally, you know, with access.
Mm-hmm.
And so our healthcare delivery system is just not as efficient as it needs to be. Mm-hmm. We've got plenty of good technology, but seeing that, again, the evolution of how we're going to deliver good care on something as critical and intimate in most people's lives as our health care is a real challenge ahead.
It is. It is. Because when you have a health issue, I mean, that's what consumes your life, especially, you know, if it's a serious condition. And it's, you know, you want to be able to have that face-to-face communication. And I get that, you know, we got to have telehealth and the situation we're in with the pandemic, but is it possible, and we've got a minute in this segment, but is it possible that we're losing some folks in terms of being able to diagnose properly if I'm just looking at you over Zoom?
Well, I voiced my opinion before to people, and I'm not against Zoom.
Of course.
That's not the
of
issue.
Of course.
But I think it needs to be a very limited part of our protocol in terms of delivering good health care.
Yes. Because there's no substitute for being in the same room with that person.
That's my opinion.
Yes, sir. But, I understand.
That may be a minority opinion at this point in time.
I hear you. So would it be safe to call you a clinician? Is that a fair term to use?
I like that term, yes.
I figured you did. I've known you well long enough to know that that's a term that you like. If you recognize the voice, you are hearing from Dr. Tony Hudson, owner of Occupational Health here in Cookeville. Their office is located in the Premier Medical Park on North Washington Avenue. This is Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. Welcome back to Local Matters here on News Talk 94.1. I'm your host, Michael Detweiler. Today is my guest is Dr. Tony Hudson. He is the owner of Occupational Health here in Cookeville. They're located on North Washington Avenue in the Premier Medical Park. Dr. Hudson, obviously we've been dealing with this pandemic for nearly a year now. It's something we certainly want to talk about here in the final segment. Give me your thoughts. Kind of an open-ended question here. Where do you see this going? You know, we've got the vaccine that's being rolled out. You know, we've had some challenges from, you know, January of 2020 here into February, almost March of 2021. Tell me what you see.
Well, really, some quick background, Michael, and I don't want to ramble, but there's, you know, my heart's been in this battle for the last year, as most people who know me realize that.
Mm-hmm.
My background in internal medicine gave me a good foundation in terms of infectious diseases, and I trained actually with some of the top infectious disease people in the world, and that was an area that I always had a keen interest in.
Mm-hmm.
So my team and I decided a year ago that we were going to be in this battle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm of the opinion you don't fight a battle in a foxhole. You have
sure.
to be out on the front lines.
Sure.
That's been a real challenge, I think, for a lot of people in the community in our country, is there's been a tremendous, in my opinion, inconsistency in terms of what people are being advised and told.
Yes,
I'm not faulting anyone. I'm
sure.
just stating the reality. One thing I try to be good at is observing about what's going on around us. I'm old enough, just to put a little historical perspective, we've always had infectious diseases.
Yes.
This obviously is a very unique situation. You know, I can easily remember 1952, polio struck.
Sure.
A lot of children died. A lot of children were paralyzed. But thinking back, it was only 2 to 3 years later that Salk and Sabin were able to develop an extremely good vaccine, which
yes.
is still used, actually.
Yes.
The Salk vaccine was the injection. Sabin came along about a year or so later. I can easily remember going to school, actually, is where we got the vaccinations.
That's
I'm not
right.
not sure if my parents were even told.
That's right.
And
a little different
what,
than
what people
today.
Need to understand is we didn't have any technology.
Right.
And yet we developed excellent vaccines. So it's not surprising that we could develop good vaccines in this day and time with the technology that's available in the time span that we've seen it.
Yes.
You know, we 57, you know, we had Asian flu, 68, mm-hmm. we had Hong Kong flu.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, lots of people sick, lots of people died.
Mm-hmm.
We survived those pandemics. We didn't have to contend with the 24-hour news cycle.
Right.
And
Social media. Right.
And that's been very confusing to a lot of people, a lot of misinformation about what they need to be doing.
Sure.
So I'm optimistic, actually. I think one thing I want to give a lot of credit to is our region, our county, the region, our state actually has performed quite well.
Yes.
I'm extremely encouraged by what we're seeing in terms of the caseload in our area.
Yes, sir.
The number of positive, percentage positive tests in terms of what we're seeing is going down. I wouldn't say precipitously, but at least it's in the right direction.
Yes.
So, and our vaccination rates are, you know, in the top 5 to 10% of counties in the state.
Yes.
So, and that's always been my tenet is that the the people on the ground have a much better idea about what's going on. And I just wish that their counsel was being sought more often than some of the decision makers that maybe you're sitting somewhere afar off.
Sure.
In terms of making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really encouraged. Mm-hmm. I think just to give you some sheer numbers, you know, we're somewhere in the range of 10-11% of our county has received at least one vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, again, looking at what we've observed and done, and we've been deeply involved in testing programs, mm-hmm. I would guess somewhere between 20-30% of our population already has natural immunity.
Yes.
So I put the thought out that if we could achieve close to 50% vaccination rates, mm-hmm. then we would be at a point in time within the next, you know, 90 days when we would really be in a good position,
mm-hmm.
and start getting a lot of this turmoil behind us.
Right.
And so we've learned a lot about this, but we've got a whole lot more to go.
Mm-hmm.
But there are no experts.
Sure.
With COVID-19.
We're learning as we go.
We are learning as we go.
Yes.
And we need to continue to learn and learn from our experiences, where we've made mistakes.
So advice given in March of 2020 may not be relevant to March of 2021. It's not relevant, basically, in terms of if you were told not to mask in March of 2020 but are being told in March of 2021 to mask, that's probably better information than we had a year ago, right?
Well, the CDC made a comment this morning. They prefaced some things that they brought out at this time.
At this time,
and that
right.
Showed some element of common sense.
That is, because there's been lack of common sense at times in dealing with this, and certainly you want to take medical advice from medical people. So tell me, you know, we've got, I don't know, 5 minutes or so remaining in the program. If you were king for a day, kids in school or out?
Well, I was fortunate and honored to serve on a group actually of healthcare providers in mm-hmm. Cookeville who gave counsel to the board in mm-hmm. our unanimous opinion that was that our children need to be in school.
Yes.
And I think that's been well proven out that was the right decision.
Yes.
Our children in this county have, and I've got firsthand experience with that, obviously, having 9 grandchildren still in school.
Yes.
I sort of interrogate them every day, at least 2 or 3 of them. So I think our children have done extremely well. I think we've served as a model for the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really encouraged by that. One point I do want to make, though, if I had to really emphasize what we need to do at this point. I made a comment to some of my friends the other day that, in my opinion, again, we have three options. One, and you can choose this option, you can stay isolated, stay in, you know, your bedroom, whatever you want to do for another year. I don't really think that's a good option. I've seen more people suffer from isolation than ever in my life, you know, over the last year. Mm-hmm. Second option is that you can just accept the fact that if you've not had COVID, you will probably get it. Mm-hmm. And so if you're under 50, you know, you're probably not going to die from it. Mm-hmm. And you may not be very, very sick, but to think that you won't eventually get it, I think is naive. Mm-hmm. So that's one option, is just don't get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Third option, which I think makes a lot of sense, is go ahead and get the vaccine, especially if you're over 50. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these vaccines are very effective. They're very safe. They've been well-researched. So it's,
they didn't start yesterday.
There's nothing perfect about this.
Sure, of course.
But there's, you know, and again, people need to understand, never since the beginning of time has there ever been a disease, infectious disease, that we don't develop antibodies, immunity to.
Right.
We sometimes lose track of that, especially if we get too much onto the internet.
Sure.
So whether you achieve your immune status naturally by having the infection, or whether you achieve your immune status by getting the vaccine, to me, that's the most reasonable way to approach this.
Yes.
And so I think there again that we've got the vaccine. We're going to have a lot of options in terms of the types of vaccine. I won't get into the nitty-gritty about that.
Sure.
So my encouragement would be get vaccinated.
Get it. And so, again, you're either – we've got 2 minutes to go in the show. So you're saying, number one, you can self-isolate if you want to. However, there are ramifications for doing that. And you've seen a lot of that in your practice in the past year. The second option is that, you know, especially for those under 50, you know, the second option is that you're, you know, going to get it, period. And more than likely, you're not going to die from it under 50. Obviously, we've seen cases where people have, but it's very rare. And then thirdly, especially the folks over 50, it's best to go get the vaccine. Have you gotten the vaccine?
I have.
Yes, because you're in the medical field. You've gotten both of them,
both of them,
And so can you report your side effects?
The first vaccine, I had my arm was sore 24 hours, nothing more so than what you would expect from any vaccination. Second vaccine, you anticipate and expect a much more vigorous response because your body is actually aggressively forming antibody.
Sure.
So in my stance was just bring it on.
Yes.
So I had a little achy feeling, nothing significant. And that's been the pretty much the reaction across the country when you look at,
achy.
You know, a lot of people's experience. So take some, you know, acetaminophen or a little ibuprofen and just get on about your business. But we've had the opportunity to validate antibody. I won't get into a lot of there. So antibody responses actually to the vaccine, and the antibody response is tremendous.
That's great. Well, thank you for being on your son-in-law's show here on Local
You're
Matters.
Welcome.
I appreciate that, and thank you for educating us. I learn a lot from you on a regular basis, and I appreciate the knowledge that you helped impart to many of us. So that's our show. Dr. Tony Hudson was our guest, and you're listening to Local Matters here on News Talk 94.1.